Accession number 27079, Reel 8.
Mr. Shaw, Reel 8. There's a number of attacks and a number of occasions in which the boat, the destroyers that were holding you, had to sheer away. What was the next episode?
The next episode was the tugs from Malta came out, a couple of the tugs from Malta. The old tug Robust, she came out, and the minesweeper Rye, and they tried towing us. This would be the afternoon, evening of the 14th. And they had mixed results, but all we did was seem to make them fast and let them go again, trying different methods of towing them. We were about 20 miles off Malta, I think. And I believe it was the harbour master came, and he started trying to arrange things to tow. And at long last, we got into a position where there was a Bramham Pen, Ledbury, and the Rye. No, the Rye was sweeping ahead of us. The tug Robust. We got them all rigged up, and she seemed to be towing along, and it was just a long, long night towing, because we were only going two or three knots at a time. It was painstakingly slow.
You must have been getting particularly concerned that you were never going to get to Malta with all these problems.
We did. We had a talk now and again when it was dark, like, and some of the lads said, I wish I was back in Glasgow, and I was saying, I wish I was back on the farm at Wetherby, and we were all saying things like that, you know, and wondering if you'd make it, but you knew you weren't far away, like. I mean, we knew we were only about 20 mile off in the end, the last 10 or 12 hours, but it was so slow that we were going, it was agonizing, it was painful. But the only worry we had was going through the minefield, because she was a fair sized ship. She had a long tow on with all these ships towing her, one at the back, one at the stern, one at the bow. The Ledbury was still at the stern, because they tried all different ships. We tried the Ledbury alongside, and then we tried the Bramham alongside, and in the end they had to swarm round us, because when we were in the minefield it was like a dog leg where you had to swing nearly 180 degrees. And I reckon that the tanker weighed about, at this point, a towing weight of about 30,000 ton, with the cargo and the ship and everything. And these ships, you know, the destroyers, they were never meant for towing. They were built for speed. And in the end, they finally nudged around this sort of a dog leg in the minefield, but we had a bit of few anxious moments there where they were really going full ahead, trying to push her bows around to get her back into the channel. You know, limited space there.
Is the channel in the minefield only marked on maps? It's not marked in the sea in any way. You've got buoys or anything.
No, it's purely
on maps.
No, it's all, you don't know it's there. No.
Were any mines bobbing around? Did you see any?
No, not then. Earlier on in the convoy, we'd seen some. There were ships with them hanging on paravanes and all sorts, because a lot of the merchant ships had minesweeping gear aboard. But no, there was none then. And like I say, it's not marked. You just judge into the navigators. Then you're in the lap of the gods. And we knew we were pretty close. They were getting worried once or twice. But eventually they got around the corner, and then it was a very slow crawl into Malta.
And your own work again at this period of time when you're being towed, what were you personally doing?
Just constantly looking after the wires. Some wires are cracking, some are parting, some are just rendering, you know. Some want slacking off. The skipper on the destroyer wants a wire slacking off, or he wants to alter the wire that he's gotten. There's always something going on.
And were you communicating by hailers or telephone or what?
Oh, well, they were alongside us. We were just talking to them. The skipper of the Ledbury, the Penn and the Bramham, we were talking to them all the time. They're just shouting down, you know. Let that one go, or tighten that other one up, or...
Again, pretty hard working shift in other words.
Oh,
pretty hard.
It was hard. It was hard work on everybody.
Because you'd had not a lot of sleep since all this had started.
No, nobody had.
Does that have any effect upon you in time?
Yeah, well, you go like a bit like a zombie. You can feel your legs, but they're a bit dull, you know. When they open the bonded stores, that helps a bit. It's
what were those?
But well, there was grub and food and a lot of rum apparently, and that seemed to rejuvenate the crew, you know. Well, all the survivors went down into the stores and helped themselves. The lads off the destroyers came aboard and walked away with stuff. Everybody just helped themselves.
So you're now 20 miles away, and had the attacks slowed down or stopped by then as you're getting...
Oh, they stopped by then. Yes, they stopped by then. We had some Spitfires and bullfighters and all sorts of things flying around by then.
They'd come out from Malta to protect
you. Yeah, oh, they'd taken over now.
That must have been quite a sight for you when they appeared.
Oh, aye, yeah. Aye, a lot of cheering. A lot of cheering when they appeared on there.
What are your memories of limping, you know, back in those last few miles into Malta?
Great. Aye, it's a good homecoming.
And then you hove into sight, and there you are, with two destroyers on one on each side of you, lashed to you and being towed in. What was the sight that you greeted you there?
Oh, it was the battlements and the ramparts. Everywhere you saw, there was people there. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, and there's crowds there.
And what were they doing? Just watching, or
what? Waving their heads off. Yeah. Waving, shouting, cheering.
And your own feelings?
You can't describe.
It must be quite a magical moment in a sense.
Yes, it was something you never forget.
Your total casualties from your crew, what have they been for the whole of this?
One.
Just the one, the gunner dead. So you hadn't lost very many. Well, you'd only lost the one.
We'd lost one gunner.
Plus the injuries or whatever to those that had them. You've been very fortunate. Could have
very
lost so many more.
The skipper burned his hands on something. I don't know. He was mucking about with a fire or something. But he'd burned his hands. But of course, we were that busy carrying extinguishers, we didn't know what was happening. I had a bleeding eardrum.
Was that noise? Was there noise?
I think it was a bomb blast. It was a big one that lifted us out of the water. I just felt it pop in my ear, and then somebody said, "Your ear's bleeding," and I wasn't bothered about it. It was I went to the hospital when we got to Malta and got it seen too late then.
Did it take you any great length of time to dock and start unloading your cargo?
Oh, a couple of hours to dock from the pier.
And who was doing the unloading? Were you the
crew? Oh, no, we just handed it over to the dockers there.
And what happened to you as a crew?
Went ashore. Just went ashore into the caves at the side. There was a cave at the side there. I went in there and had to give us a tot of rum and a cup of tea. Sorted it out for a hotel.
And then what, sleep?
No. Go down to the shipping office and pay off. And that was it. You're finished with the ship. You're no longer the responsibility of the ship owner.
So come on that way.
I got 2 more days in Ray Morton. His pay stopped when he hit the water. And the gunners and the galley boy pay stopped. Well, the gunners would probably get paid in the army, but the galley boy and Ray Morton.
So when they knocked off the ship, flown off the ship, they no longer become the responsibility of the company?
No.
It's incredible. Incredible.
So you're stuck in Malta, you can't get home, you've got no money, but the ship owner didn't want to know you.
How long were you in Malta?
A month.
Had you been thanked by, you know, had the skipper had opportunity to thank you all when you pulled into Malta?
Yeah, we saw him in the shipping office when he paid us off and that was it.
How much you get, do you recall, how much you got being paid off for this particular trip?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I can't remember. I know when we eventually got home, we got a fortnight's holiday. You've been requested 2 weeks' leave with pay. It was £4.17/6.
How long were you on Malta?
Month. I think it was just over a month.
So you would experience some of the raids on Malta, did you?
Oh, yeah. We used to go up on the roof in the hotel and watch them during the night sometimes when they were night raiding.
You get an idea of what they'd been going through.
Oh, hell, as soon as you stepped ashore, you knew that. Streets are full of rubble. Buildings were down.
How did the Maltese receive you when you got on shore and were mixing with them?
Oh, great. Great.
Had you got a bit of a reputation by then? Not you personally, but being the crew member of the Ohio?
No, they were just pleased to see everybody. Everybody was treated the same.
Mm. So after the month, what happened to you?
I got a lift on a... Every night so many people went home by aircraft as they had a plane going to Gibraltar and they put somebody on it. And there was about 6 of us, I think, this night. And it came up our turn. Of course, there's a hell of a lot of survivors there. It came our turn, must have come up, and we were put on a Hudson bomber. And we took off and landed in Gib next morning.
Pleased that you were going home?
Oh, thrilled a bit. We had a look round Gib, and when we got back to, they stuck us in some hotel there, and when we got back to the hotel for our tea, we were halfway through our tea and the bloke come and said, "Do you want to lift home?" And we said, "Aye." And we just left our tea and grabbed what bits and pieces we had, and we went down to Quayside. There was an Australian destroyer coming back to the UK. She was escorting a Dutch cruiser from the Far East. And he took about 20 survivors, all told.
And how were you treated on the ship?
Oh, great. Oh, they looked after us, the Aussie lads. It was an Australian ship, Australian crew. And the skipper was a mad Englishman, they said. They said he was stone mad. But all the tides were great on the ship. Yes, well looked after. they launched a boat coming through the Bay of Biscay. It wasn't all that bad weather, but it was choppy because somebody had fallen over the side, I remember. I think we got him back. We got the boat back, I know. But the skipper was one of these blokes. If he saw anything, he fired it. You seen a? There was a long-range bomber, a German, and he was firing the 4.7 LA gun at him. Long, low-angle gun. He said, if anybody questions us, we're firing shrapnel shells. He was just a blaze away, they reckon. If you've seen anything at all, he would blaze away, they said. But we got back to Glasgow, champion. No bother at all.
What happened to you next when you got home?
We got our fortnight's leave.
Yeah.
And then I was at home a while after that. And then started looking around for another ship.
Which one did you get this time?
Memory's good, I've got to look everything up. Elswick Park. The SS Elswick Park.
And what date was this?
This was in 1943.
And what work was she doing?
She was a tramp steamer. Tramp steamer, general cargo ship.
And were you sailing between which ports?
Sailing from South Shields to America. Halifax again for a convoy and the coast to Portland, Maine. Loaded grain. Come back home to England again.
Now, had you any problems in this convoy?
1943. Elswick Park, yes, she had no trouble going out, but the convoy had trouble coming back, but it was on the opposite side of the convoy to where we were.
And this would be U-boat action, was it?
Yeah. It was during the night, you could see the fires and that. And we've seen the rescue tugs steaming up towards the fires, but we didn't know what it was. But we were all right, we were on the other side of the convoy.
You just be what, standing to,
Just action stations, that's all. You couldn't see a lot, you could see the fires, but they stood you to action stations and that was it.
And were you on her for just the one voyage?
Yeah.
And then where did you go then?
I went and I joined a ship at Hull called the Carlton.
What was she doing?
Dry cargo ship. She went back down the Mediterranean. We went back to Bone in North Africa with war supplies from Glasgow. Tanks, ammunition, stores. Bone in North Africa.
That's because the North African invasion had gone through then. In fact,
I had gone then.
So it would be much more peaceful cruise than the last one.
It was like a cruise then. And we went from there to Italy. Loaded up war supplies again there and went to Italy.
Any problems? Any air attacks?
No. No air attacks, just the American ship that bumped into us and tore a great hole in us.
How did that happen?
We were in a convoy going to Brindisi, but the convoy was going to Bari. And they said to the skippers, the convoy going to Bari turned to starboard 30 degrees or whatever it was, and this big Yankee ship next to us turned to port. and hid us right in the middle of the ship beside the galley, number three hold. And we just went down in the water and took us into Brindisi.
That towed you in?
No, we steamed in. We just had a big hole in the side.
Was there any injuries at all?
We just went down in the water. Nobody hurt on either ship. And we discharged there and they patched us up and sent us round to Taranto for repairs. But every time they put us in dry dock, they had to pull us out again and put a Navy ship in. And we were there 3 months, eventually waiting for repairs.
So what were you doing for 3 months?
Anchored out in the bay.
Did you get ashore?
Yeah, we used to send us ashore to play football. Rubbish like that, keep your mind going. Aye, 3 months waiting. Eventually the patches up and we came home. They sent us across to Algiers, loaded us with dummy torpedoes and sent us home.
That's a funny cargo, dummy torpedoes.
Well, that's what they said when they loaded them. But when we got to the UK, they put all the red flags up and said it's all live ammunition, so... Just a way of keeping your spirits up, maybe.
And these were still in convoy conditions, were they?
No, coming home out the Medi, we came out on our own. Because we picked an American anti-aircraft crew up and the guns. And we came on our own, I remember. I don't know how, but we came on our own.
So you were on this ship then for quite a while, the Carlton?
Yes, it was until October 1944, 11 months.
And which ship did you join then?
Ramil.
And was she again on similar...
No, she was coastwise shipping, home trade articles. The watches were 4 on, 4 off, and a dog watch. We were talking about that last week, the dog watch. 4 to 6 and 6 to 8.
And what were you carrying?
Coal.
North east
to London. Blyth to London, all the colliers did that.
So this would be after D-Day. The invasion of Europe would have gone forward.
September 1945.
Well, the end of the war, of course, was May 1945.
Aye. Yeah.
So that was your wartime service in effect over?
That was it, yeah.
And you stayed with the merchant ship for how long?
The last ship was the Pompey Power, May 1957. It was all coastwise shipping. Blyth to London, Blyth to the Channel ports, Channel Islands, Blyth to London.
A merchant sailor during the war, were you entitled to campaign medals of any kind?
Why?
Which ones did you get?
Oh. How many medals did I get, Peach? Star, the Atlantic Star, Africa Star, Pacific Star, Italy Star, 3945 War Medal, Defence Medal, and the medal issued by the Maltese government and the Maritime Service Medal.